Imagine it's 2 a.m., you're on call, okay, and a 62-year-old patient, rheumatoid arthritis, on immunosuppressants, presents with daily fevers, maxing at 102 Fahrenheit for the past 3 weeks. Yeah. And the initial labs, the imaging, all completely unrevealing. Your attending just asks for your next
The
steps.
classic scenario.
What's the definitive approach to a fever that just won't quit? This is 88 Diagnoses, and today we're plunging into the enigmatic world of fever of unknown origin, FUO.
Rapid rundown FUO essentials.
Okay, let's unpack this. The infamous FUO. It's not just any lingering fever, right? It's a specific beast.
Precisely. From, a clinician's perspective, it's fever persisting longer than typical self-limiting conditions without an identifiable cause, despite a reasonable evaluation. Researchers have tried to pin it down with three key components for its definition.
Right, and those components are absolutely vital because we're not just talking about someone with a bad cold that's sticking around.
Exactly. First, the fever itself. Traditionally, it's defined as a temperature greater than 38.3 Celsius, that's 100.9 Fahrenheit, recorded on several occasions.
Okay.
It's worth noting, though, some experts are now proposing maybe a slightly lower cutoff, above 38.0 Celsius or 100.4 Fahrenheit.
Why is that?
Well, it acknowledges that normal body temperature fluctuates, right? It often peaks late afternoon, early evening, and sometimes it's just lower baseline in older adults or folks with lower BMI.
Good point. Good to keep those variations in mind. And then there's a minimum duration, isn't there?
Yes, a minimum of 3 weeks. 3 weeks of unexplained febrile episodes is typically required. And finally, a minimum amount of diagnostic testing has to have been performed. Think basic labs like a CBC, urinalysis, plus certain radiographic imaging.
Okay, so to lock this in, let's think of the FUO definition as 3 weeks, 100.9 workup weary.
I like that.
That's 3 weeks duration, fever above 100.9 Fahrenheit. And workup weary means despite doing that initial reasonable evaluation, those basic labs, imaging, you're still weary, still without a diagnosis.
And beyond that classic definition you just nailed, FUOs are often categorized into four main types.
Right.
There's classic FUO, the traditional one we're mostly talking about,
Yeah.
then healthcare-associated FUO for hospitalized or, recently exposed patients.
Okay.
FUO in immunocompromised patients, think neutropenia, transplant recipients, people on prednisone or biologics, uncontrolled HIV, and finally, travel-associated FUO.
I remember early in residency, I almost blew off a persistent flu-like fever. Just, thought it would pass. Then later, bam, clearly met FUO criteria.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, so here's the shortcut. Always consider the patient's context, healthcare exposure, recent travel, immunocompromise. That immediately flags them for those specific FUO categories. Don't miss it. All right, before we dive deeper, let's do a quick pause. Freeze for 10 seconds. Name two of the four categories of FUO. Go.
What's fascinating, and often kind of an overlooked point, is that even if a patient doesn't strictly meet all these parameters, your clinical judgment often dictates managing them as if they do have FUO anyway.
Right, makes sense.
It really highlights the fluid nature of real-world diagnostics. You often combine the basic workup with parts of the initial evaluation, even if the clock hasn't quite hit 3 weeks perfectly. Burn this in your brain. FUO isn't just a high fever, it's a prolonged, unexplained fever with specific diagnostic criteria that demand a careful and systematic evaluation.
Ward wins, digging deeper.
Okay, segment two, ward wins. Here's where it gets really interesting. The diagnostic journey for FUO is, it's like being a medical detective. And your most powerful tool, history and physical. We're talking about really digging in here.
Absolutely. This cannot be overstated. Delays in diagnosis often trace back to initial gaps in the patient's history. Sometimes the patient themselves doesn't even remember everything or doesn't think it's relevant.
Which is exactly why collateral history, like from a partner or family member, is so incredibly powerful. They might recall forgotten details or exposures. I remember a case where a patient's partner worked with Q fever-infected animals. That was it. That was the key.
Absolutely critical. And in the history of present illness, you need to focus on the temporal relationship of symptoms. Did the jaundice come before the fever or after? That sequence can be incredibly telling. Also, get a detailed fever history. Max daily temps, duration, frequency, and importantly, how are they measuring their temperature? Oral or tympanic usually work, but tell them to avoid axillary or forehead thermometers if possible. They're just not as accurate.
Got it.
Now, here's something interesting. those historical fever patterns, you know, like Pell-Ebstein for Hodgkin's or Tershenkorten for malaria, they're fascinating, but their actual utility for narrowing differentials today is pretty limited.
Really?
Yeah, relying too heavily on them can sometimes lead you down the wrong path in modern practice.
That's a really good point, not getting too fixated on old patterns. But what about temperature pulse dissociation, that relative bradycardia? How reliable is that as a red flag? And like, what's a common misunderstanding about it?
Great question. Temperature pulse dissociation is a key clue, definitely. If the heart rate doesn't jump up like you'd expect with the fever, it's a significant flag for things like enteric fever, typhoid, brucellosis, drug fever, or even factitious fever.
Okay.
The misconception is often that it's only seen in like one or two specific infections, but it can be broader than that. And of course, other symptoms matter. Rigors might point to infection or drug reactions. That evanescent rash, the one that comes and goes with the fever, could be Still's disease, oral ulcers plus rash plus fever, could even be acute HIV.
And then the big one, the comprehensive past medical, medication, family, and social history. This is where you can uncover diagnostic gold.
Yes, past medical. Valvular heart disease, thinking endocarditis, TB history, any implants, immunocompromising conditions, past malignancy. Medications are crucial for drug fever. Tell patients, bring everything in. OTC, cannabis, herbals, home remedies, whatever.
Because drug fever often resolves pretty quickly after stopping the drug, right? Like
Okay.
within a couple of half-lives.
Exactly. Resolves often within two half-lives. Then family history. Inherited stuff like familial Mediterranean fever, or maybe familial tendencies for things like SLE, RA, IBD.
But the social history,
Yeah.
for me, this is often paramount. It's just amazing how crucial seemingly small details can be. You absolutely cannot afford to miss asking about close contacts, where they live, travel history, even years ago, for latent things like TB,
Right.
occupational exposures, hobbies like caving and histoplasmosis, outdoor exposures to soil or water, animal or insect exposures, food habits like unpasteurized dairy, smoking, drug use, sexual history, recent healthcare, including dental. It all counts.
And remember, we're still deep in that 3 weeks, 100.9 workup weary phase here. This rigorous history and physical, it's absolutely part of that workup weary evaluation.
Okay, here's a shortcut for your next 3 a.m. call. Always try to get a collateral history from family or a partner if you can. They often remember crucial details the patient forgot.
Good tip.
And another one. Advise patients to keep a detailed fever diary. Temperature, heart rate, associated symptoms, any antipyretics they took. This can reveal crucial patterns or that dissociation we talked about, things you'd otherwise miss. All right, quick mental check again. Freeze for 10 seconds. Name two specific social history details that could potentially unlock an FUO diagnosis. Go.
So this raises an important question then. After you've done all this incredible history gathering and physical exam, what kind of labs do we actually throw at these patients initially? Burn this into your brain. The detailed history and thorough physical exam are your primary diagnostic weapons in FUO. They often reveal the subtle clues you need to crack the case.
Case clash, the diagnostic hunt.
Segment three, case clash. So what happens when that initial workup is unrevealing and the pressure is really starting to build? This is where the true diagnostic puzzle begins.
Right. And the methodical approach continues. But the focus shifts now. It shifts towards more targeted testing and, frankly, managing uncertainty. For initial diagnostic testing in classic FUO, before you even think about antibiotics,
Okay, what's the list?
you need a complete blood count with DIF and a peripheral smear, a complete metabolic panel, including calcium and liver tests, and crucially, two sets of blood cultures from two separate venous sites, and make sure they're incubated for at least 5 days.
5 days. Okay. Plus urinalysis, HIV testing, maybe with viral load if you're suspecting acute HIV, and then the rheumatologic stuff like ANA and RF.
Yes. Also, a heterophile antibody or EBV tests if mono is suspected. Maybe add CMV and toxo titers too. And definitely get an ESR and CRP.
Not procalcitonin, though, routinely.
Not routinely for FUO, no. Its utility here is pretty limited. Also, get a ferritin level. And given the recent weirdness with US cases, thick and thin blood smears from malaria, even in non-endemic areas, if the picture fits at all.
Wow, okay.
And finally, a CT of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis with contrast, that's really a cornerstone, helps rule out a lot of things up front, like occult abscesses or malignancy.
Okay. Now, initial management principles. I always remember the PACE. Most classic FUO patients can be managed outpatient, right? But if they're really sick, obviously hospitalize them.
Correct.
And then there's the big one, the thing that trips up new residents sometimes,
Yep.
the limited role of empiric treatment.
Absolutely huge.
Well,
First, discontinue non-essential meds, especially anything new or known to cause fever. Drug fever is real and easily missed.
Yeah.
And generally, avoid antipyretics unless the patient is miserable or has risk factors for complications because they just mask patterns and features we need to see.
Right.
But most importantly, and this is critical, generally avoid empiric antibiotics. They can mask or delay the diagnosis, mess up your cultures. It's usually not the right move
Unless.
unless you have very strong suspicion for something specific and life-threatening, and do not administer empiric glucocorticoids either.
Why not steroids? People love steroids.
Because they can seriously worsen underlying infections, mask malignancies, mess up biopsy results. The only major exception is if you strongly suspect giant cell arteritis. In that case, you start steroids immediately, don't wait for the biopsy. But otherwise, hold off.
Okay, that's clear. So if fevers persist after all this initial stuff, we move to subsequent evaluation.
Exactly. Serial evaluations.
Yeah.
Maybe weekly, outpatient if they're stable. Repeat the history, and exam patients often remember new things over time, new clues emerge. Then it's all about targeted testing based on those evolving clues. Thinking about specific tests for mono, endocarditis, TB, disseminated fungal infections, vasculitis, whatever fits the picture that's developing.
And sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and get tissue, right? A biopsy.
Yep, often necessary. Temporal artery biopsy for GCA, lymph node or other masses for malignancy or infection, skin biopsies, even liver or bone marrow biopsies, especially if there are hematologic abnormalities. Bone marrow books actually has a pretty high yield in those cases.
And what if, after all that, you still don't have an answer? That's the really tough spot.
It is. For patients who seem generally well, continued observation is often okay. Many FUOs actually resolve spontaneously. You also have to consider factitious fever if they seem well and the fever's never actually documented in clinic or hospital. But for patients who are ill or where you still have a high concern for something serious like malignancy or infection, the go-to imaging is FDG PTTT scans.
That scans
Oh,
up.
yeah. They're highly preferred. High sensitivity, they can often localize inflammation or malignancy, pointing you towards a biopsy site. And interestingly, a negative PET-CT is actually a pretty good predictor of spontaneous resolution eventually.
That's good to know.
There's also emerging techs, like broad-range molecular testing, like 16S RNA sequencing, for really tricky infections.
So keep coming back to our compass. 3 weeks, 100.9, workup weary. It guides your thinking all the way through. Don't be that resident who forgets this vital tip. Always get blood cultures from two separate sites before giving any antibiotics for FUO. Protect that diagnostic window. And another critical one. If you suspect giant cell arteritis, start those corticosteroids immediately. Don't wait for the biopsy results. The biopsy can be done later, the treatment can't wait. Time for another quick pause. Freeze for 10 seconds. What is the primary imaging modality recommended for persistent FUO if a cause isn't found? Go. And one more quick recall. Freeze for 10 seconds. Why should you generally avoid empiric antibiotics in FUO unless it's truly life-threatening? Go.
Ultimately, finding the cause of FUO, it's a marathon, not a sprint. It often takes real patience and persistence. But here's an encouraging thought. Up to half of classic FUO patients actually remain undiagnosed.
Half.
Yeah, but most of them have a good prognosis. Fevers resolve spontaneously in nearly 60% of those undiagnosed cases in some studies. Mortality, when it does happen, really depends on the underlying cause drive. Malignancy carries the highest risk, followed by infection, then non-infectious inflammatory diseases. Burn this into your brain. Avoid empiric treatment in FUO unless it's life or death. Focus rigorously on targeted testing based on evolving clues, and really leverage advanced imaging like PTCT when other avenues are exhausted. Interactive case study.
All right, let's throw you into the fire. Interactive case time. A 35-year-old male presents with recurrent fevers up to 102 Fahrenheit for 6 weeks now. He also has migratory joint pain and this evanescent rash that kind of comes and goes with the fever. Oh, and he worked as a zookeeper.
Ooh, zookeeper, okay.
Yeah. Initial CBC, CMP, LFTs, blood cultures, UA, HIV, ANA, RF, CT, chest, abdomen, pelvis, all negative. Okay, resident, you're seeing this patient. Freeze for 10 seconds. What's your immediate top differential for this specific constellation of symptoms given his history and why? Go.
Excellent thinking. Given that classic evanescent rash, the migratory joint pain, and the prolonged fever, Still's disease, adult onset Still's disease has got to be right at the top of your list. Absolutely.
What about the zookeeper part?
Yeah, the zookeeper history does make you think about zoonosis for sure. You can't ignore it. But those specific features, especially the rash and the joint pain pattern, really push Still's disease forward initially.
Okay, now for the curveball. What if this zookeeper's fever diary showed clear temperature pulse dissociation, and he also mentioned significant unexplained weight loss. What new differential suddenly jumps higher on your list?
Ah, okay, that changes things. The temperature pulse dissociation immediately brings back thoughts of enteric fever, brucellosis, maybe even drug fever like we talked about. And the weight loss, especially combined with the zookeeper job. Now, those zoonotic infections like brucellosis or Q fever or even PB, which can be sneaky with nonspecific fevers and weight loss, become much more prominent.
So what do you do differently?
Well, this really shifts our focus. We'd be leaning much more towards ordering specific serologies for those infections, or maybe even considering tissue biopsies sooner rather than later.
Got it. Okay, last twist. What if he had no rash or joint pain at all, but he did have a history of recent travel to Southeast Asia, and on exam, you felt a very subtle, palpable spleen?
Now you're thinking like a pro. Okay, take away the rash and joints, add travel to Southeast Asia and splenomegaly, boom. Endemic infections like malaria or typhoid instantly become critical considerations. You'd need thick and thin blood smears, stat, plus specific serologies for typhoid. Completely different pathway.
Exactly. That's the kind of real-time decision-making you need to absolutely nail on the wards. Memory Blast recap. Listen up. Future attending. Time for the Memory Blast.
Burn this into your brain. Get ready.
FUO. 3 weeks. 100.9. Workup weary. Remember it.
History and physical are absolutely paramount. Get collateral. Keep that fever diary.
Avoid empiric antibiotics and steroids unless it's truly life-threatening. Don't cloud the picture.
Targeted testing is your friend. Don't forget the power of PET TCT when you're stuck.
And remember, most undiagnosed FUOs actually have a good prognosis. Don't panic. Outro. You absolutely crushed this deep dive into FUO. Seriously, great work thinking through that. Now, hit the wards with one tip you learned today. Tonight, quiz yourself on the 3 weeks, 100.9 workup weary mnemonic. And hey, DM us your clutch FUO moments or, you know, your epic fails. We learn from those too at 88 Diagnoses. Keep learning, keep growing, and keep saving lives.